Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey. It's Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
Do we have a theme song?
We have a theme at the entrance. We have a little of a little musical entrance.
Maybe we could write a song.
You chose, by the way.
I did, because I really wanted. Who did Green Onions? Who did that?
Booker T.
Booker T. and the MGs. Mm-hmm. So I wanted Booker T. and the MGs to do our intro, and the North American Mission Board looked into that and said, "No, that's not going to happen."
So what song is it that we
Booker
have?
T. and the MGs?
No, I mean, on our podcast.
Oh, it's just a generic.
It's a generic.
Supposed to sound like Booker T. and the
MGs.
Oh,
I see. Gotcha.
It's what's called a needle drop.
The needle drop.
It's a needle drop. You know, they from the old days when they would use records.
But we ought to have a musical entrance where we talked about, we have sing, you know, this is Mark and Dan and Mark and Revitalize.
Maybe we need to write
the background. We'll do a contest. So go ahead and write us a musical entrance.
Yes, please.
Please.
We need it.
And send it to us. And if we choose yours, we'll put you on the air.
Hey, I love it. We've never done that. A
contest. That's right.
Before.
Southern Baptists have talent.
That's right.
We'll do that.
This could be the beginning of something.
What are we talking
awful.
About today?
All right. Well, we're talking about just completely opposite. This isn't funny at all.
Oh, it's not funny.
Sorry. We're dealing with something that most, I would bet a bag of cookies that most of the guys that listen to us, this is going to hurt a little bit.
It is.
Because we've all gone through this, and some of us are, a lot of us are going through it right now.
Today, yes.
Today. And we're talking about pastors that bear the scars of church wounds.
Yeah.
And the challenge to address those things.
Well, and I travel all the time, and just came from Montana. I was up there and headed to Columbus, Georgia next, and wherever I go, guys come up to me and they say a couple of things. First, they often do say, thank you. Really, I'm serious. Thank you for the podcast. I listen to it. It's kind of a lifeline. I really enjoy it. And that means more to me than you know. We joke a lot about this podcast, but the three of us take this very, very seriously.
Yeah.
But then they always say as well, you know, however, let me tell you what I'm going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the hurt that they've experienced, the woundedness that they have. I had a guy come up to me in Montana just yesterday, and he said, we're going to have to close our church. And he explained all the problems, all the pain, all the hurt, and it was just weighing on him as though he had some sort of, he was a major failure in all of this. And I don't believe he was. I really don't. And just the hurt that he felt in that. And so I know pastors are, we hurt.
Yeah.
Sheep bite.
Yep.
Sheep kick. I mean, they can hurt. And so, again, our good friend Dr. Lawless gives us 10 reasons pastors bear the scars of church wounds and maybe how we can address some of those. Number one, he says, few of us as pastors fully expect the anguish that church members can cause.
Mm.
We don't understand the pain they can cause us sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The anguish and the angst to our family. We know that shepherding people can be difficult, but we're often caught off guard by the venom that some people have.
Yeah.
Unexpected,
yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, where did that come from type
right.
thing? You know,
mm-hmm.
like, I sure didn't expect that to happen.
Right.
And then what happens is if you've already got, if it's a wound on a wound on a wound,
yeah.
then you're really, really going through a difficult crisis. And the thing about it is there are so many ramifications of that, because when you're wounded, your family's wounded, you know, and mm-hmm. your friends are wounded, and other pastors are, you know, it's the old body life thing, you know, when one hurts, we all hurt.
Yeah.
And this is a key thing. Members do, as you said, sheep bite, and and you're going to get bit. That's just the bottom
line.
And
sometimes it's at such an unexpected time. And again, I like the word he uses. They can be so venomous.
Mm.
At one day, one of your church members can be very affirming and kind, and then at some kind of a meeting you have, a committee meeting or a church meeting or something else, and they just bite at you and just say something really hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I often say, you know, they give you the stink eye.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where did that look come from?
Yeah.
You know, what did I say there? Totally unexpected. And I think especially young pastors, as you go into ministry, you're really surprised at how venomous mm-hmm. some of your church members can be. Well, because you're thinking,
I mean, I remember when I was, I'm just sitting here going, man, I remember just how naive I was. I'm like, man, we all love Jesus.
Yes.
And we love each other. I mean, I think I'm envisioning church camp, like all the time. You know what I mean? We're worshiping the Lord. We're encouraging each other. We're hugging each other. I mean, what in the world? And then you realize, one, man, we're all in process.
Right.
And so we got brothers, we're all sinners.
Right.
And we're, but then you also have people in the church who are not regenerated.
That's
They're
right.
not Ooh. Saved. And I think that was one of the things that took me by surprise. I'm going, well, man, why would you be part of a church if you weren't a Christian? And you realize over time, boy, the people that have hurt me the most, I would say, in ministry are those who have been part of the church for a long, long time, but they do not bear the fruit of the Spirit. And so I can't judge a person's their soul and their heart, but I'll tell you what, man, because you give yourself to people, right? You trust people, and then when they turn on you, it's really painful.
And not only you, but if they turn on
your
family member,
oh my gosh, you know, your wife, your kids,
yeah, and they do. I mean, that does happen because they don't want to confront you, so they'll take it out on one.
And brothers, we do talk about revitalization, preaching Jesus in revitalization, preaching the gospel in revitalization.
Yep.
The gospel, the gospel, the gospel. It's not what you've done for Jesus, it's what Jesus has done for you.
Yeah.
Preaching the atonement.
Yep.
Here's the deal. We say this all the time. If you've got unregenerate church members, they will not tolerate that level of preaching.
Yes.
They'll be okay with moralistic and preaching about how to be a better therapeutic preaching. They'll be fine with that.
Yep.
You preach Jesus, you preach the atonement, you preach the gospel, they're going to come. They're not going to be happy about that.
Yep.
They may tell you your preaching's too shallow, we need deeper, or they may just get mad at you for different things and you don't know where it's coming from. They're not going to come to you and say, quit preaching about Jesus.
Yeah, right.
So you're gonna be surprised at some of the venom that comes even when you're preaching appropriate messages.
Yeah.
And so I love what he
says here. Darkness doesn't like the light, man.
It doesn't. And
that's
just
the truth.
They will speak out. Number two, the arrows often come from some that were really close to you, the kiss of Judas.
Mm.
Gentlemen,
yeah.
I have heard on so many occasions pastors literally weeping. I mean literally crying, saying, it was the chairman of the search committee that called me that was the first person to turn on me.
Wow.
Or it was some of the search committee members that became my greatest enemies. And part of that was they really felt like they were going to be able to control you. They hired you because they wanted to be the puppet masters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get there and you follow the leadership of the Holy Spirit and you start doing things differently than they want you to, then those who have been your closest supporters can be your greatest enemies. And what has happened in my life is sometimes I've had guys get real close to me and want to do everything they can for me. I can remember who it was. I heard a seminary professor say one time, when you go to a new church and the guy comes up to you and says, I'm your biggest supporter. I'll have your back, pastor, no matter what happens. I'll be here for you. Anything you need, you call me. I remember that professor said, you got to watch out for that guy. Because what he may be trying to do is, again, try to manipulate you. You mentioned in a previous podcast of a guy who had a lot of money who would buy a pastor new suit, new clothes, maybe even a new car or something like that. So I have done that. So I've had some guys that come up to me and said, I got your back. I'm going to be your biggest supporter. I believe in supporting my pastor. And said, okay, so you start giving him more and more responsibility, more and more leadership. You trust him more and more with information. And then you find out one day, he's talking bad about you.
Mm-hmm.
He's turned on you.
Yeah.
He's using all that against you.
Mm-hmm.
And you now you've empowered this guy. And now it's a real issue to try to take all of that back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think sometimes we're surprised that those closest to us can be the ones who often becomes the ones who become a greatest enemy to us.
Yeah, boy, it's true.
Number three, Mark.
Number three, wounds affect not only the pastor, but also his family. And I think, Dan, you were kind of
we kind of touched on that already. Yeah. But you know, that one issue is life-changing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is life-changing. And here's the thing that you have to remember, that you're your family's pastor, too.
Yeah, first and foremost.
That's right, first and foremost.
And so when they turn on somebody in your family, not only do you have to pastor your family and take them, through that through that process, you still have to pastor your people.
And guys, as a pastor, you may be able to forgive that person for lashing out at you in the business meeting. you may be able to do that. That person may come to you a few weeks later and say, Pastor, look, I've been struggling with some anger in my life and I shouldn't be doing that. And would you accept my apology? You pray together and you hug them and man, you're sweet. But your wife hasn't forgot how that guy spoke to you in that business meeting. Yep. And her level of forgiveness may be a little different than yours. And it can cause even some disruption in your own family.
Good point.
So you got to be really aware of that, which also means if people hurt you in the church, guys, be real cautious about how much of that information you share with your family.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Because, well, unpack that, Mark. Go ahead.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, this is where I keep thinking you've got to protect your wives and kids at the same time. Because again, and when you're having hard conversations, I think I've shared this before. One of the things I tell guys we're raising up is, when you have a hard conversation, you leave the house, go walk around the neighborhood and have that conversation. Don't have that conversation
on the phone with someone.
On the phone with your wife and kids, hearing your response and all these kinds of things. Because here's the thing. In fact, I was just thinking about this, Mark, as you were talking. I know two guys recently who both had to resign their position as pastors because their wives were so hurt by the church. They said, I'm never walking back in that church again.
Yeah.
So, and I think this has raised these conversations. How do we protect our wives and kids at the same time from some of that venom?
Well, and Pastor, your wife has not been called to shepherd that congregation.
Yeah.
She's not anointed to do it. Mm-hmm. And therefore she doesn't have the giftedness to do it. And therefore, when you sort of ask her to help you share this burden and this load of these people who are being mean to you, she's not really called to do that.
Yeah,
you're going to give her something she can't handle in a way. And I don't mean because she's a woman. I mean because she's not called to handle that.
Yeah.
And then what's she supposed to do with it? She just worries about you now.
Right.
Exactly.
Now, I think it's legitimate to say to her, man, I need you to pray with me. There's some struggles at church. Mm-hmm. And maybe explain some of them. But do not come home and unload the whole truck on her.
Yeah.
And tell her every word in the conversation.
Yeah.
And how mean they were to you. Because, again, they may make it right with you, but then she's got to deal with all of that and process all of that.
Yeah, and if you don't have a group of deacons or elders you can speak to, find some friends outside your church.
Well, that's number four.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yep. So not only do the wounds affect the pastor, but his family. And I want to read what Chuck says here. In fact, a family member struggle the most with forgiving people and moving forward.
Yeah.
You hurt my dad. You hurt my husband.
Yeah.
That's even more than you hurt me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they struggle more. Number four, pastors hurt alone. Many don't have real friends. Others hold things together all by themselves. They don't want to tell anybody about the pains in ministry. They feel like a failure. And they just simply try to go through this all alone. And Dr. Lawless says, aloneness only compounds the pain. Mm. Going through this alone does not make it better. It makes it worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so important for you to have somebody you can talk to about this, not your wife, and maybe probably not even somebody in your church.
Yeah, exactly.
I would suggest you not do that.
Yep.
Another pastor, an associational missionary, a state convention leader, another friend from seminary, someone you can pick up the phone anytime, day or night, and say, man, I got to tell you what's going on. I'm really hurting, and process that.
Well, I think that's one of the great benefits of the conferences, that we do, so many of them a year. A great place to meet guys that are going through the similar things that you're going
absolutely.
Through.
Totally, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can establish those friendships and the lines are open for you to communicate
completely.
With each other. It doesn't have to be somebody that's in your town.
Yeah.
But as we share this, there are so many guys going through this alone.
Yep.
They got deacons that are being mean to them. They got a church treasurer that's just giving them fits. They've got... And they don't tell their family, and they don't tell anybody else, and loneliness just makes it worse. You're not supposed to go through this alone.
Here's number five. Some pastors view conflict as ministry failure.
I think a lot of them do.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
They hold themselves to such a high standard, actually an impossible standard, and they beat themselves up when they don't achieve it, and they even question their call.
Yeah.
Why is all this conflict going on? Must be something wrong with me.
Something's wrong with me. What am I doing wrong? Yep.
Rather than... these people may be in a really sinful, rebellious state.
Yeah.
Or the fact that God's using me to help clarify some issues in this church, and obviously they're not going to like that.
Yeah.
And they're going to be challenged by that. But the adversary would make you want to think that you're the reason and that you are a failure in ministry. He says, number six, pastoral grief. No, this is so powerful. Pastoral grief stretches our theology almost to the breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, why are people so angry with me? Why am I feeling so disappointed? Why am I feeling so distraught? Why am I so depressed? Where is God in all of this?
Yep.
Almost to the breaking point. I think, why would God allow a faithful pastor to have to go through all of this?
Yeah.
They may even question, am I even supposed to be a pastor?
Yeah.
We've all done that. We've all experienced that. And you go, if I got this much conflict, am I even supposed to be here?
Mm.
Is this even something that I should be doing? And where is God in all this?
Yeah.
I mean, the Apostle Paul 3 times prayed for the relief of the thorn in his flesh. Maybe the second time he was having some theological questions about it.
Yeah.
By the third time, he got it solved. But certainly, it's not unusual, guys, for us to question our call or even question our theology when... As I preached in Montana yesterday, a very familiar old sermon about how that John, even though it was just a short time after he heard the voice of God say, "This is my beloved Son, whom I'm well pleased," sends word to Jesus' disciples, "Are you the one, or do we look for another?" I mean, that's ultimately questioning everything.
Right,
His circumstances made him question his theology. If it happened to John, it's going to happen to you.
Yeah. Hmm. No, that's really good. That's really good. Here's the next one. Number 7, some pastors experience such pain in more than one church.
Yeah, the repetition actions of church members in multiple congregations can really drain the pastor's confidence.
Yep, yep.
Look, some of you are called, you feel compelled to go to churches that are troubled. You've told me that.
Yep.
So many of you have said, I just really feel compelled. Okay, fine. Well, you're going to go to churches troubled. You're going to get troubled churches.
Yeah. Yep.
And troubled church members.
Yep, that's right.
And so some of you say, man, do I have to go through this everywhere I go? And if the answer is you're going to a church in need of revitalization, then yes, you are.
Yeah, that's the reality.
It's the reality. Well, we look at the characteristics of a revitalizing pastor, and I used to say, when we first came up with this, I said they had to have a high tolerance for pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jimbo and a bunch of guys on our team, maybe you too, Mark, you push back and go, well, a guy can tolerate pain and make no change in the church.
Yeah.
So it's not just a tolerance for pain, it's a pastoral tenacity.
That's right, yep.
So you have to work through the pain.
Yes.
And if you're going to pastor a revitalizing church, you're going to have people who are going to be angst about it.
Yeah.
And if you go to more than one church that needs to be revitalized, it's going to happen again and again.
Yep.
And so there has to be this strong pastoral grit.
Pastoral grit,
you can just fight through it and make it through.
And this is where a theology of suffering is so important. Like, we talk about helping our people develop a strong biblical theology of suffering, before the suffering comes. God's sovereignty and all this, these kinds of things. But pastor, you've got to lean into your theology of suffering for yourself. Are you trusting? Do you believe what you're preaching? That God is sovereign, that he loves you, that he's with you. That when James says, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, because this testing, it's developing a perseverance in you. I would say you've got to preach these truths to your heart over and over again to find strength and hope in the midst of your own pain and suffering.
And I also want to say that the next one he talks about here, this is a big one. We up to this point, if you've been listening, you think, well, yeah, wait a minute, Clifton, but maybe they're the reason for the problem. Okay, you're right. Number 8, Chuck Lawless says, too many pastors are blinded by their own role in the conflict.
Yeah.
If you're not self-aware of your own potential to be at fault, you only build animosity toward everyone else. Pride complicates this tendency. You've got to really ask yourself, after we've just said, hey, it happens, right? Unregenerate people are going to be mad at you. If you're in a church revitalization, you're going to force people to do things they're not comfortable with. And if you go to more than one church revitalization, it's going to happen more than once. And all of us have sheep that bite us. We've been through all that. But you do have to step back and go, wait a minute, what's my role in all this?
Yeah.
Am I causing it, or am I even making it worse by how I respond to it?
Yeah.
What's my emotional awareness? And one of the hardest things we have, Mark, when we go out and do conferences and guys come up to us, we only hear one side of the story.
Yeah, that's true.
We hear their side of the story, which is the only side they know.
Yeah.
But we're wondering, so sometimes I'll call the associational missionary and I'll say, look, is there another side to this? And they go, well, he's really done this and he didn't do this correctly. And he's fully unaware of his own involvement in this.
That's right. That's right. Self-awareness is so important. Well, that's one thing you hear. I was just thinking about a guy I was talking to, and he's been at like 4 or 5 churches, sweet guy, but really needs to grow in self-awareness. And he's had issues at every church. And I tried to just lovingly say, bud, what's the common denominator here? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think he was like, man, yeah, there's some areas I need to grow. And it's like, that's right. You know? So part of this is we got to be, that's humility that say, sometimes it is my problem. And I need to name that, and I need to work on a particular area. Am I not good with conflict? What might it be?
Well, I think we go into every issue in our life, in our ministry and assume we're part of the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to assume that, right? Because we're all fallen.
That's true.
So what's, and not only am I part of the problem, but how do I make it worse? Some of you guys take a conflict, as we say, you spend $20 on a 10-cent problem. Now, there's a small problem in your church, and you blow it up by the way you respond to it. And maybe the problem wasn't yours originally, but your reaction to it was far worse than the problem.
It's become your problem.
And it's become your problem.
Yeah.
And again, that's why you got to have mentors and older men and other men around you to speak into you and to share with you give you some insight. It's just, you've got to check out what is my role in all of this.
And the flip side, number 9, some criticism of pastors is simply unfounded. I think that's the truth. So sometimes we need a name. It's very much founded.
Well, the New Testament says, you know, you bring a charge against an elder, it's got to be more than one person.
Right, right.
Right?
Yep.
Otherwise, you just have an opinion, and sometimes people are working out their angst of all pastors on you.
Uh-huh.
Or they just get a personal thing
going. That's true, man. I mean, past pain.
You're just the next one in line. And I like this. Sometimes people are just evil. You know? They just are.
Yeah.
And they say something. And people have a tendency to listen to negative things more than positive things.
Right.
So someone says something evil about you, and it goes all over the church.
Yeah.
Someone says something good, and hardly anybody pays any attention to it.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to the world, man.
That's right.
That's the cost of doing business as a pastor.
Yeah.
And some criticism is simply unfounded.
Yep, that's right.
And plus, there's the part of spiritual warfare, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, some of it is compounded by that.
Yes.
You know, so. I think a sign of a really healthy pastor, and I don't have this like I should, is a person who can discern between the two. Mm-hmm. You can say, yeah, that criticism's legit, but say, no, that criticism's not legit. I'm not going to let that bother me. That's not true. And just to not overreact to it.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Finally, number 10, guys, pastors sometimes refuse to admit they have scars.
Yeah. What they do is they publicly talk about grace and forgiveness and never really acknowledge the hurt they still carry around with them. And then they become sort of disingenuous in their preaching and their teaching. And there's this disconnect between what they're teaching and what they're living. They talk about grace and forgiveness, but they're feeling wounded and unforgiven.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're being unforgiven to the people who've hurt them. And you can't live that way as a pastor for very
long. Boy, that's so true.
Well, the thing is that whenever you're hurt, the one thing you want to do is develop a callousness, to stop the hurt.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, and boy, this will crater a pastorate, is you become so calloused to a wound that you become calloused to the people.
Yeah.
And there's, you just build up a wall.
Well, I remember serving for a pastor. This was one of my first ministry positions. I was in college, and I remember a pastor, he was a real stoic kind of guy, and he's like, you know what? As a pastor, Mark, you got to understand this. You're the rock of this church. You're the rock. I can't let people see my emotion. I'm the rock. And it was almost like this old school mindset. Mm-hmm. Never let them see a sweat. Never let them. And I remember at the time going, really? Does that mean, you know? Versus seeing, no, Jesus is the rock, man.
That's right.
Yeah, you're not the rock.
There you go.
In fact, they need to see your weakness so that they see your dependence on Jesus. Jesus is the hero here, not you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think that's where, I think there are pastors who almost have that mindset.
Yeah.
Like, if I show my weakness
and
my hurt, well, will people lose respect for me? Or will I, you know what I mean? Whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, guys, this is the good news of the gospel. As Jesus said, as Paul writes, in my weakness, he is strong.
That's right.
And that's where our hope actually comes, knowing we're all broken, we're all hurting, and we need Christ, we need one another.
Right.
I think when we become transparent, it makes it easier to be clear with the gospel. You know, I mean, there's clarity because we're living it. You know, we're telling them, this is how you deal with suffering and pain and hurt and your sin. And then pretend that we don't have to. That's nonsense. Mm-hmm. We do have to.
So last thing, let's say that you're a you're playing the Division 1A football or whatever you call it in NCAA, and it's your last game as a senior, all right? And you're going up against a group of guys who are going to be in the NFL next year. You're a fullback, Mark. There's not many fullbacks in football, but you're a fullback.
Okay, fullback.
And your job is to protect that quarterback from that linebacker who is going to be in NFL next year, right? And it's his last game too, and he's going to have you for lunch, man.
Yeah.
He's going to make a beeline for that quarterback every single time, and your only job all that Saturday afternoon is to keep him from getting to the quarterback. So you're in the locker room, and you put on every piece of equipment you can put on. You tighten up your shoes. You make sure your pads are fitting tight. You're ready to go. Why? Because you know you're going to get hit on every single play.
Yep.
But what if you knew for sure you were going to win that game? It's the last game you get to play. You're not going to be playing football next year. You're not good enough to go in the NFL. This is your last game.
Yep.
You would actually expect to get hit.
Yep.
You wouldn't want the coach to take you out of one game.
That's right.
You were already suited up to get hit.
Yeah.
That's why you put on the full armor of God.
Amen, bro.
That's why you go into this battle.
Come on.
And you say, Satan, bring it on.
That's right.
Bring it on, because we win. Yes. And one day when I get to heaven, I'm never going to be able to suit up like this again.
That's right.
So let me show you how much I love Jesus. Let me show you. And if
Amen.
We expect that as a pastor, we're going to encounter these kind of hurts, we won't be surprised.
That's right.
Yep. And so Paul said, I fought the good fight.
Yep.
He didn't say I danced the good dance or I sang the good song.
Yep. I fought the
guys,
good fight.
It's a fight.
Yep.
And we need to put on the armor of God. We do battle against Satan and we know we win.
Yep.
I got nothing else but that.
Come on.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Amen.
We hope this has been an encouragement to you. It's an encouragement to us, you know, for us to even just sit around and talk about these things. It's such a blessing. And it improves our ministry. And so we're excited and hope and pray that it encourages you and blesses your ministry also. Thank you for being a part of our podcast. Thank you to the North American Mission Board for letting us do this. We're so grateful for that. And we'll see you the next time.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.